This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition, a draft preview edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen, and we are taping this on draft eve, Wednesday night, about 24 hours out before the first round begins. And Adam, we've done all the preview shows. I know both of us have done a ton of homework on this draft class, and I'm just excited to finally get this thing underway.
Yeah, and I'm actually kind of curious to see how they do it in terms of, like, the functionality of the whole thing.
I know.
In terms of getting the picks in. You just worry that there's going to be, like, some hacker or somebody is going to be like, this is my Super Bowl, and he's going to just take everything down. But I think just to see where people end up after all this time, you know, just, you know, going over the players and everything like that, I think it'll be a lot of fun.
It's a really great draft to, obviously, we don't want any of the problems that are leading to this type of draft structure and in the technology piece of it. But at the same time, it's a very good draft class. It's a very deep draft class. Then you add on all this craziness that's going on surrounding the draft, and it just makes for a pretty fascinating story. You know, just the whole thing is just pretty bizarre. We are going to get into some more draft fits for the Patriots and just kind of set up the first round for New England, if you will. But we do have to get to the news that Rob Gronkowski, Gronk, is coming out of retirement, and he's now a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He had his introductory Bucs press conference about an hour ago, a Zoom call, if you will, with Roberto, as he likes to tell us. And he's back. Gronk is back, and he is playing football for the Bucs with Tom Brady. Premeditated, it sounds like, a little bit, that as soon as Brady decided that he was going to move on from New England, the Patriots or Gronk decided that he might want to come back to football, just not playing for Bill Belichick in New England.
Yeah, I was a bit shocked by the whole thing. I thought he was definitely done, especially by the way his body had sort of changed since he had left. But, you know, clearly, you know, I feel like a lot of guys, when they leave the game, have that tug to come back within that first couple years of leaving in the first place. And I think this is just that with Gronkowski. I mean, you know, obviously he wanted to be with Brady. But it's just one of those things where when he comes back, I wonder how much, you know, back to 100% Gronk he will be. Because it's tough to leave and get back into playing shape, but again, I was really shocked when it happened. I definitely didn't see it coming.
I didn't see it coming either. But in hindsight, we probably should have, because it seemed for the whole 2018 season and then the offseason following before he made the retirement announcement, it seemed like a lot of it had to do with the grueling coaching style of the Patriots and of Bill Belichick, of why Rob Gronkowski was kind of just trying to fit a round hole in a square peg of being the Patriot way, of being a Patriot type player, for a guy that really wasn't about regiment, wasn't about being serious 100% of the time. You know, that wasn't necessarily his sort of MO at all, even as a member of the Patriots. So I think the interesting aspect of it is that as soon as Brady moves on, Gronk calls his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, and literally days after Brady makes the announcement that he's going to Tampa Bay, Gronk starts packing on the weight again and getting ready to ramp it back up to get back into football shape and to play football again. The reason why the Patriots didn't get more in the trade, I think, is an interesting storyline, too. You know, a fourth-round pick for Gronk and a seventh. The biggest reason why was that the Patriots essentially had zero leverage in this deal whatsoever. I understand that they had the player, but there was only one team that he was going to play for, the Tampa Bay Bucs. So the Bucs had them over a barrel, kind of, knowing that the only team that they were going to get compensation from was Tampa Bay. On top of that, from a salary cap perspective, Gronk could have unfiled retirement papers, right? Said, I'm coming back. Then immediately, as soon as he does that, his $9.25 million cap hit automatically hits the Patriots 2020 salary cap. And we know their cap situation is what it is. So it's just a kind of a conflux of factors. One, the draft being so soon, right, that they wanted to get the pick this year and not kick the can down the road on the pick. And the second thing being their salary cap situation, they really didn't have much of a choice but sort of to negotiate with Tampa Bay and come to a fair agreement. But at the same time, what we wanted to talk about more was it's basically a free fourth-round pick for Bill Belichick. The player was retired. He wasn't going to play for New England. So this is a fourth-round pick the Patriots weren't expecting to have. And we've talked a ton in the draft process about trading back into the second round to fill that gap between 23 and 87. Well, now Belichick has another trade chip to potentially do that with.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that the second round this year is a good place to be. It's, you know, being the middle of the second round is not that different than the end of the first this year. So I think it's if they can somehow use those picks to get into the second round, that would be a good thing. You know, even we're going to get into this too, but I mean, even if they get rid of their first round pick and drop into the second round, get two picks out of it, that'd be great. So, you know, the whole thing with, you know, playing in a different sort of organization. A lot has been made about how Bruce Arians is more of a player's coach, less of a taskmaster, all that stuff, and you know, more fun to play with. So I mean, a lot has been made about the, you know, Belichick being the opposite of that, and maybe this is just, you know, one of the things that Gronkowski wants is to play under a different type of coach.
I think that's exactly what it is. I really think that he was just more or less fed up with playing for Bill Belichick, in the sense that, not that he has any hate towards Bill Belichick or animosity towards him as a person, but just as a coach, he's a very grueling and demanding football coach. We know that. Yeah. And Gronk said so himself. I'm not going to sit here and say it's an easy organization to play for. So right. I really think that the Bucks are offering Brady and Gronkowski some kind of like that halfway retirement, right? Where they can just kind of show up, be themselves, have fun with it, play loose, play, you know, during the week. If you don't want to practice, okay, you sit out this practice, you know, not the end of the world. We're not going to come, you know, and get angry about that. Whereas with New England, we know it's a completely different animal. So the two things that I wanted to talk about now that we kind of turn more towards the draft was obviously trading into the second round. We did hit that on that a little bit, but also there's another trade chip that we haven't really discussed that much, and that's Joe Tooney and potentially trading him on the franchise tag. There's some rumors today from down in Miami that the Dolphins have called the Patriots about trading for Joe Tooney, and then Miami has a ton of picks throughout the entire draft. They have three first round picks, so they have a load of picks that they could send New England. I think that Tooney's an interesting one because they could get that top 50 pick with the team that slates him as, obviously, as their starter at left guard. They could get a top 50 pick for a swap, just Tooney for the pick automatically, and problem solved right there.
Yeah, and Tooney, obviously, you know, a very good offensive lineman and a nice chip. You know, this is also like something that they could sort of hold on to when the draft starts and one of their players starts slipping, and offer Tooney and a pick to move up. It's one of their best pieces right now. So yeah, it's, you know, you would hate to see Tooney go, but again, there's guys you can draft and there's guys in the system already that could fill that hole potentially.
This is stemming from, of course, a report by Mike Reese last week that the Patriots and Joe Tooney are not close on a contract extension. So it would make sense for them to kind of shop a trade here in this situation. And I think the biggest thing is with Tooney, first of all, he was the third most valuable player on their offense last year behind Brady and Edelman. It was Brady, Edelman, Tooney at guard. That kind of tells you how good of a player he was for them last year. Extremely durable, extremely consistent, hardly ever gets beat in pass protection, didn't give up a sack last year in pass pro. So all those things are just great traits about him as a player. but he is due $14 million next year on the tag. The Patriots are up against the cap. They don't need to move Tooney. That's not the only move that they could make to free up the cap space that they're going to need, right? So they don't need to move Tooney. But at the same time, it is a valuable trade chip for them to have. I think there's going to be a lot of interest. And you mentioned a player the Patriots liking falling. Well, if one of the interior linemen gets drafted before a team can that wants to draft that player, now all of a sudden they might look at it and they might stack their board and see, okay, well, Tooney is at, you know, here and the rest of the guys are all the way down here at this point, you know, with the way the board is shaping up. You know, Cesar Ruiz just got drafted. Now what do we do type of situation. Right. I think that that's a very interesting, intriguing situation, especially on the start of day two. I would start to kind of listen in and see if you hear anything more about Tooney once day two begins, because that's when all the first round guys will be off the board. The guard and offensive line board kind of gets reset at that point, and then teams can kind of gauge the value of, do we want to draft somebody that's not as high on our board, that we don't, that's a little bit of a reach at this spot, or just make the trade for Tooney. So it's a fascinating trade chip for the Patriots to have. The fourth round pick from Gronk is a nice piece for them to have as well. If they can package together a third and a fourth and maybe a fifth or something like that, or one of their sixth round picks, they can move up into the back end of the second round. They could then probably take that back end of the second round pick and flip it again, you know, and move up even more. You know how Belichick does things. They'll flip the pick 17 times before it's all said and done. I wanted to talk about the QB market, though, quickly here. I think the interesting thing about the QB market is obviously Tua Tagovailoa, but at the same time, it's really only a couple of teams that are maybe even interested in a quarterback, and that's what makes it always fascinating, is that that's the one position where there's probably only three or four teams that actually want to draft a quarterback in the first round. So when those teams are off the board, then it becomes a little bit dicey as to where those quarterbacks are going to exactly fall, and that's why we see guys fall so often, you know, in drafts and stuff like that over the years. So you got Miami at five, who seem to be locked in at this point on an offensive tackle in the top five, maybe Andrew Thomas out of Georgia, and not a quarterback. Then you have the Chargers at six, and then you have Jacksonville at nine. And that once Tua gets past nine, then it's a free.
Yes.
You know, then it can really get to a point where the Patriots at 23 are in play. Now, Miami has expressed interest in possibly moving back up in the first round with some of their back end of the first round picks to package together to go and get the quarterback of their choosing. But that's when it certainly gets fascinating, is if Tua gets outside the top 10.
Yeah, and all this talk of Miami getting a tackle first and actually trading up to get a tackle is kind of strange. It almost makes you feel like, okay, this is some sort of screen, because I don't know how Miami could pass on Tua at six or five.
It's there. Five.
I don't see how they could pass on Tua at five and then like just sort of cross their fingers and hope that he'll be there later in the first round when they pick again. I don't think that's realistic. So it's almost like them just passing on a quarterback almost, or getting somebody who's going to fall. You know, I think really, like you said, the whole intrigue with this is about Tua, because, you know, if he doesn't get injured this year, he's in the conversations for the number one pick, you know, and he's been sort of in that role for over a year now, it seems like. And you just wonder who's going to take the chance on, you know, getting a guy who some teams might think is not going to be healthy for them. So, but again, if Tua falls past the Chargers and Jaguars and stuff like that, if he's gone past there and people are picking Herbert and Jordan Love and all this stuff, then the Patriots really do have to consider, I don't know how seriously, but they have to at least consider moving up to get Tua, because I think everybody will agree that he's a phenomenal player. They're just worried about his medicals.
I think the biggest concern for the Patriots, from a Patriots standpoint, is that the one thing that Bill Belichick always talks about at the quarterback position is durability. Just being out there every single week is so important to him. So no durability red flag, certainly. size red flag as well, just outside of the injuries too, is also on the smaller end of the spectrum for a quarterback. And then you have the fact that he didn't test at all, so there's no 40 times, there's nothing to work off of in that regard. So this is the point that Michael Lombardi made on his podcast, was that in the Patriots grading system, Tua just can't possibly be that high, just because of all the kind of red flags that dock him: durability, size, and no 40 and no athletic testing. That's not going to yield a really great draft grade for him in the Patriots system. Yeah. So once you get to past Jacksonville, like we were talking about, you got Cleveland at 10, all set at quarterback. The Jets at 11, all set at quarterback. Vegas, okay, maybe they can get into the discussion for a quarterback, but probably not.
No, probably not.
San Francisco, probably not. Tampa Bay, don't think so. Denver loves Drew Lock. They're set on Drew Lock. Atlanta with Matt Ryan. Dallas with Dak Prescott. And then there comes the Miami Dolphins up again at 18. So they could literally take their best player on their board, a tackle, at 5 or at 3 potentially if they trade up, and then get to all the way at 18 and they get both players. That's got to be their thinking right now.
That's got to be their thinking. At the same time, if he falls that far, somebody's going to go up and try to get him.
I would think so, but they also have a ton of capital with they have the 18th pick and the 26th pick. They have three picks in the first round. So they have a ton of – they could probably outbid anybody as well to go up and trade with Vegas or trade with the Jets. Maybe not the Jets because of division rivalry, but you know what I mean. So the interesting piece of it is that – I also wanted to talk about Jordan Love quickly because he has as good of a chance to fall in the first round as Tua does. You know, there's only so many chairs, and you run out of chairs at some point for some of these guys. What are your thoughts just briefly about Jordan Love in New England? Because I think his evaluation to me is extremely fascinating.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, like, physically he's all there. You know what I mean? He hasn't made the best decisions, especially this past season as opposed to the season before. But, like, you might be something where you look at him and you say, okay, maybe I can get him from the previous year if I tell him to stick to this and to stick to that. You know, he's a hell of a ball of clay to mold because he really does have some fantastic, you know, tools. Like, he's got a really strong arm. He's a good athlete. So it's not like he'd be more of a project, I'm saying, than, you know, some of these other guys.
I agree. I think the one thing that really stands out to me that I love, first of all, that his release is awesome. Snappy, over the top, three quarters. It's exactly what you want out of a release. And his ball, he's got great touch on it. It's not Justin Herbert. It's not Josh Allen, where the ball's just coming out 100 miles an hour every single time. He can loft it over a linebacker. He can put some touch on the ball. He can certainly zip it when he needs to do that. So he's got multiple pitches. And I think that that's an interesting kind of element to his evaluation, is that he is very different in that respect from some of the other raw, bad decision makers that we've seen come out the last couple of years. He's certainly more Patrick Mahomes in that regard than he is Josh Allen, right? He's got the ability to really drop arm angles, throw from any platform, an extremely good playmaker, just a natural playmaker in the pocket and outside the pocket. But that being said, I don't think he knows what an underneath linebacker is. Like, I think he still loses underneath linebackers constantly. And sometimes he just throws interceptions where he just throws it right to the other team. Like, there's a corner standing between him and the receiver, and he somehow can't see, just kind of has x-ray vision through the corner and throws the ball anyway. Those types of plays I don't think are necessarily consistent year to year. Like, I think he's going to fix that because it's just too easy not to fix it at the next level, especially with a little bit of coaching. So I think that those are the elements that you look at, is that look at all 17 of his interceptions and you see that some of them are just boneheaded plays that he's going to get out of his system eventually. He's not going to throw those types of bad throws always. I'm not saying he's going to have great ball security, but I wouldn't get too caught up in the fact that he had a ton of interceptions just because of the nature of the interceptions. On top of that, his offense stunk, his scheme stunk, his playmakers stunk. And he was really trying to create something out of nothing pretty much constantly. So I think that there's a lot of elements of him trying to trying too hard to fit the ball into tight windows, to make plays down the field, and kind of being loose with the football. All right. Other than the quarterbacks, I think that there's a really good chance that a defensive player could just fall right in the Patriots' lap at 23-2. Yes. When you start doing the math, you got the four quarterbacks, you got the four tackles, you got the three wide receivers, you got Isaiah Simmons, you got Jeff Okuda, you got Chase Young. At some point in time, that's about 15, 16 guys right there that I just named, and you only need to get to 23 to, let's say, have Javon Kinlaw or Chazon or one of those players fall in your lap.
Yeah, I'd like to see them get if they go defense at that spot, I wouldn't mind to see them get one of the linebackers like Kenneth Murray or Patrick Queen, one of those guys. I think with what they lost this offseason, it would be smart to get a linebacker. Murray, I think, is really good. He's versatile. Like, you can line him up on the edge and rush the passer. You can sort of drop him into coverage, and he's pretty good there. Very good tackler. Just sort of a versatile, tough player. And Kinlaw is somebody who I don't think people expect to drop that far, but I've seen him fall that far in a couple of mocks. And I like him a lot. He's got these long arms, and like, he can really use them well. He's a super strong guy, and he finds a way to get in the backfield a lot, especially if you're just single blocking him. That's really difficult. But I think either one of those guys as a defensive player would be smart picks there.
Kinlaw, I think out of any prospect that I watch in this class, his upper body power and his hand power just to jolt linemen is incredible. Yeah. As soon as the ball is snapped, he is off the ball in a split second. He's got great first step explosiveness, and he's up and under and into the chest, and you just see these linemen just fly backwards when he makes contact with them. That's the type of power that I think the Patriots in particular can really harness and thrive in a two-gapping system. I think the one thing that you watched about him on tape that could cause him to fall from a film perspective is sometimes he's a little bit bull in the china shop, right? He's just kind of coming off the ball with all that power and explosiveness and firing into gaps, and he doesn't even actually know where the ball is. You know, the head is down, and he's kind of just trying to blow everything up and cause havoc, but he's not necessarily making a play on the football.
Right.
So that I think that that's a big element that you see as a first-round prospect. You want to really see a guy that can find the ball and have body control and patience to not corral some of that explosiveness that he brings. The other thing is, although he's a good pass rusher as well, so it sort of hurts his, you know, this argument a little bit, is that interior linemen, especially defensive or offensive interior linemen, either one really, but defensive tackles are not extremely valuable in the analytics community. From a value standpoint, it's just not a valuable pick to make unless the guy is going to be nobody's Aaron Donald, but an Aaron Donald type where the pass rushing skill is just off the charts. And Kinlaw is a little bit raw in that regard in terms of converting all that speed and power into real pass rush moves and not just being a bull rusher. So I think that those are some elements to look at as why he might actually end up falling in this draft. I know Evan Silva, who's always on point with his mock draft, he's one of the most accurate mock drafters out there, had the Patriots ticking Kinlaw at 23, had it falling right in their laps. When you start to look at kind of just value and positional need, and you go on down the board to the teams ahead of the Patriots, there's just not a ton of teams that need a penetrating, two-gapping defensive tackle. They're just not that ton of teams that need that kind of skill set. So it'd be really interesting to see it. Murray is another interesting player. I'm glad you brought him up. The Patriots, in my mind, just looking at their roster construction like you just did, it's impossible for them not to draft at least one linebacker at some point in the top 100 picks. I mean, they just lost Jamie Collins, they lost Kyle Van Noy, they lost Alandon Roberts. That's three layers of depth there that they lost from that position. All guys that played both on and off the line in terms of Collins and Van Noy, at least. So it's in a spot that they just need bodies is really what it is. And Murray is a productive player at OU. He's a very good sideline-to-sideline speed, great athlete. He reminds me a little bit of Collins coming out. Raw processor, has a little bit of struggles kind of clicking into blocking schemes and figuring out where he fits right into the run fit. But the sideline-to-sideline speed, the ability to tackle anywhere, the range to drop into coverage, to cover guys out of the backfield, the versatility to rush on the line of scrimmage, and just a freak athlete. Not as quite as freaky as Collins was, but pretty close. So he kind of has the same similar projection, same strengths and weaknesses as Jamie Collins did. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if they're a little bit interested in Murray as well. The one other guy, we talked about Chase on in another episode, but I really think that there's a possibility that, your LSU brethren might actually fall to the Patriots as well.
Yeah, I mean, if he's there and you're picking, you whatever, make the typing
right. What is it? You can't say write the card up.
Yeah. I was gonna say that, but you can't do this. So, well, you do whatever it is to make your pick as fast as possible and get Chase on. Like, I mean, talk about you know one of the best pass rushers in the entire draft falling to you at that point. He's so good. He's versatile. He's done a lot different. They asked him to do so much at LSU, and he really can. I really believe his best days are ahead of him too. I think, you know, like production wise, you didn't see the big sack numbers at LSU, but he wasn't just rushing the passer there. If you just want to stick him in a role there, he's somebody that could be a double digit sack guy in the NFL, no doubt.
I think the biggest thing with him that gets misunderstood is this is a guy that wore the 18 jersey, a big time leader in that program, a team captain. He, as much as he shows that kind of flash of athleticism, I think sometimes people think when they hear of like a freaky athletic prospect that didn't have the production, they think of a guy that's doesn't have a high motor, doesn't work hard, isn't that lunch pail guy, and sort of is untapped potential, right? Where with Chazon, I really believe that he is the opposite of that. I think he's a guy that is extremely hardworking, was a team captain, 18 jersey, all that kind of stuff. And on top of that, he did exactly what they wanted him to do in that scheme. When he rushed the passer, he got pressure on the quarterback. Did it end up in sacks every single time? No, but he was in the backfield disrupting. When they wanted him to set the edge, he could do that. When they wanted him to drop into coverage, he could do that. So I think there's a lot of elements of his game that the Patriots really like from their edge position. He's a little bit undersized for their usual standard at that spot, but at the same time, I think that he really has the ability to set the edge when he wants to. Lock out the arms, good arm extension, good length, good lower body power to kind of go from the feet up to generate some of that force. And then at the same time, you look around the league, and Bill Belichick says this all the time, you got to have an answer for all the different kind of waves and all the different types of things that are going on around the league. And you got Deshaun Watson's and Patrick Mahomes's and obviously Lamar Jackson. You got Josh Allen in your own division. You need a guy that can run and chase these quarterbacks, that can spy them, that can keep them in the pocket. And then when they get out of the pocket, you need to get a guy that can then close down and go get them. So you put Chase on Lamar Jackson's arm side, to his right, and Lamar goes to scramble and roll out, then you have one of the most athletic players on defense standing right in his way to kind of contain him a little bit at least.
Yeah, and I think the other thing with Chazon too is he's got a okay sort of arsenal of moves, but he's usually just trying to go wide on a guy. You know, he's usually just trying to bend around Peter somebody.
Rush, yep.
If you give him a few more things, a few more tools to his toolbox, you know, he can probably do a lot better. And let's not forget too that his sophomore year was wiped out by injury, and that did sort of affect how quickly he got, you know, back to the field and into effectiveness this past season. So, and again, like you're saying, when you wear 18 at LSU, that is like the pinnacle in terms of like a leadership role on the team. They don't give those to just anybody. So, obviously he would step in and be a good locker room presence, and, you know, just a tremendous athlete with so much further he can go in terms of what he can do with pass rush skills.
Well, the Patriots can get their hands on Kinlaw or Chazon in the first round. I think that's a huge W for them. An A-plus draft automatically just starting there off the top. So let's hope that one of those guys fall. A couple of other guys I wanted to mention before we get out of here. Antoine Winfield Jr., the Patriots apparently have shown quite a bit of interest in him in the pre-draft process. We didn't really do a safety show, so I wanted to just touch on him a little bit. Son of Antoine Winfield Sr., who's an all-pro cornerback for a couple of years in the NFL, and just incredible football IQ, instincts, ball tracking, everything that you want from a free safety.
Yeah, I, you know, be sure. I'm not comparing him to this player. I'm just saying he reminds me of him.
Oh, God.
He reminds me of the Honey Badger.
Yeah.
The way he plays. He's just such a ball hawk.
Yeah.
He is always sort of around the ball, forcing fumbles, you know, interceptions, sacks, a little bit of everything. He's just somebody that you can tell loves the game, just lives, breathes football. He just, you know, just a playmaker out there. You know, I know he's not that big. How tall is he anyway?
5'9". The one knock on him.
The one knock. I'll take it, though. I mean, he's a good enough athlete to make up for it. He's a really fun player to watch. His regular film, not even his highlights, are fun to watch. I mean, he really knows how to play the game. Just a very, very active player.
As much as I hate the cliches of, you know, son of a former player and all that kind of stuff, Winfield is exactly what the cliche means. You know, he is the definition of the cliche. You can just tell that he's been coached and schooled extremely well about how to play the defensive back position at a high level. Guy that really, I think, is probably the best true free safety or pure free safety in this class. You want to put him deep. He has great range over the top. His length and his short arms and stuff like that really don't show up all that often because he arrives so early at the catch point all the time that he makes up for it. He had two of the best interceptions from a deep center field spot. One of them might have actually been split safety, but regardless, two of the best interceptions I've seen on tape of any safety in this class, I think the two best. One was against Penn State where he's got a receiver. He's off the line about 20 yards in a deep safety role. And he's got a wide receiver running at him at full speed from in the slot. So he could go inside or he could go outside. And he ends up going on a skinny post. And Winfield just reads him out square to him, reads him out, and then flips his hips and stays over the top of the route and then high points it for an interception. You see the hip and flip transition there at the top of his pedal. The ability to transition that quickly and then get up to top speed to stay over the top of that route while the other guy is moving at full speed and you're at a standstill is extremely difficult to do. You mentioned the Honey Badger. A lot of other people compare him to Earl Thomas, who's also that undersized safety type of prospect. I don't think that those comparisons are that outlandish or that unfair to either party. I think that Antoine Winfield is that good of a prospect that he deserves to be considered in that conversation. If you want more of a realistic view, the Packers just drafted Darnell Savage last year, who's a smaller guy, and he played exceptionally well as a rookie for them as a deep safety, coming in just and really taking over the job right away. So Winfield is a really interesting prospect for them. Certainly doesn't check the measurables boxes, but he tested extremely well from an athletic profile standpoint, ran in the mid-4.4s, has the instincts, not afraid to mix it up as well. He'll go and tackle somebody. He'll go and take on a blocker, even though he's not the biggest guy in the world. So I would really love that pick as well. Last one here I wanted to mention, we didn't talk about Harrison Bryant in the tight end show. If he goes in the first round, then I know nothing about this entire thing if he goes in the first round. With that being said, there's a ton of Patriots buzz that the Pats are interested in Harrison Bryant in some capacity, and he's an interesting player. He's a very fundamentally, technically savvy route runner and not a great athlete, but it's certainly, you can watch the tape, especially against Ohio State, he's extremely polished at this stage of his career.
Yeah, he seems like somebody who a lot of people have started to mention. Out of the tight ends, it's interesting because people are starting to say that you know Cole Kmet from Notre Dame is going to be one of those guys that we mentioned in the first round. I'm not sure if any of these guys are necessarily first round guys, but you know, for me, the guy that I still like is Troutman, the Dayton guy, you know, the football powerhouse Dayton. You know, I like him still, but you know, I think that enough of them are close enough together where I wouldn't be shocked or, you know, upset or whatever if they picked somebody else. So Bryant, I think, would sort of be in that category. Say they trade back into the second round, they take him there, or they take Troutman there, they take Kmet there. You know, one of those guys I think would be a fair selection there.
Personally, I think Cole Kmet's the most overrated prospect in this draft, maybe, honestly, from a Patriots standpoint, at least, right? Because we just have heard about him throughout the entire last couple of months, just over and over again, Cole Kmet, Cole Kmet, Cole Kmet. The biggest thing about Cole Kmet to me is that he does three things well. And not all of them he does exceptionally well, but he does them well enough. One of them is just, he's just naturally massive. He's just huge. You know, he's 6'6", 262 pounds. So he's just a huge dude that can rumble between the numbers, that can take on that contact, that can really just absorb hits and just be a big body target for a quarterback. Right. On top of that, with the size, it comes the catch radius, the big hands. You know, he's just big. He's just a big guy. The second thing that he does well is that he can and he does get up the seam pretty quickly. He's got a nice initial burst to him where he can get up the seam pretty quickly and threaten vertically, the coverage vertically. The third thing that he does is that he is an effective people mover as a blocker, although his technique is really, really raw and has a long way to go. Other than that, I don't think I can think of anything that really stands out about him and is that overly impressive. And on top of that, he is an absolute plotter. I mean, he's a clunker. He's a guy that's really not going to get in and out of a break, not going to create any horizontal separation or, you know, have any sort of separation quickness at the top of the route. So we're talking about a straight line receiver or just a box out jump ball receiver, and then a guy that can somewhat block effectively, and that's the guy we're going to draft in the first round, and it's mind-blowing to me. With Trotman and Bryan, I think that's an interesting conversation because they're similar type of players. Both of them are very nuanced route runners. Both of them are okay blockers, but probably not going to be serious people movers as an inline guy. I think the difference between Trotman and Bryan for me is the athletic testing. You know, Trotman tested like a very, very good athlete, had one of the best three cone times in the draft, had a pretty decent 40 time, at least faster than what Bryan ran. So his athletic profile is, you know, much better, or significantly better, I should say, than Harrison Bryan. So size, he's bigger, he's more athletic than Bryant is, but at the same time, he doesn't have that game against Ohio State where he looks, you know, at home against a very good defense, against a power five, very good defense. You can go and watch tape of Harrison Bryan beating Jeff Okuda on a fade, a back shoulder fade, and say, okay, this is him doing it against an NFL corner, where we can't say that about Trotman.
Right. Yeah. That is the thing. There is, you know, playing at Dayton, he's not going to be playing Ohio State, you know, so.
Exactly.
But I think, you know, depending on where you take these tight ends, I don't think you can go that wrong. Like, I don't think it'd be like a horrible thing, even if they drafted Kmet in the second round.
No, it wouldn't be horrible. Yeah. If they drafted Kmet in the first round, to me, that would be bad. But if they drafted anything outside of that, then it's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I'm just not really buying any of these guys as like a first round pick, you know, like jumping up into the first round. I'm not sure I see that. But I like Trotman, you know. I think he's somebody that, you know, he did well at the Senior Bowl too, right? I mean, and so I think, you know, he's a big target. He's used to going up against guys that are much smaller than him. But I think he's a dangerous weapon, you know, once he sort of puts it all together. But, you know, these are, you know, second round picks, third round guys. But they're going to need to get a tight end at some point, though.
It's crazy. I would say that I'd probably take like 8 or 9 wide receivers before I took a tight end in this draft, which is exactly, it's good and bad for the Patriots. I think it's mostly good, though, because it means that those tight ends are probably going to get knocked into the second and third round and be available maybe even later on day two than some people are expecting. So that's good news for the Patriots. I hope in my heart of hearts that they take a wide receiver at some point early in this draft and get some firepower for assuming it's Stidham, but whoever it is at quarterback, give them a hope, give them a prayer in order to be successful next year by adding a legitimate receiving threat, because adding a guy like a Cole Kmet is not adding a legitimate receiving threat. That's adding a guy that's a solid tight end prospect, no doubt, but that's not a needle mover by any means at the pass catching position. Maybe Trotman or Bryan can move the needle a little bit more from a receiving standpoint, but we're still not talking about guys that are going to change the complexion of the offense. Patriots need to change the complexion of the offense type of guy.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny how a lot of these mock drafts have Patriots getting like Ruiz or somebody at that 23rd pick, and then 24 going Justin Jefferson.
I know.
You know, and so like, yeah, if that actually happened, that'd be something that Patriots fans would watch, and they'd track Jefferson's stats every week and be like, this is the guy we didn't pick, you know.
It would be the same thing. We've seen it so many times over the years at this point. Yeah. You know, they'll take a center, or they'll take AJ Epenenza, who's going to be a solid player for them, but they'll take him anyways. And then Rager and Justin Jefferson and Ayuk and T. Higgins and all these guys will go after him, and everybody will be clamoring for one of those guys. It happens every year. All right, before we wrap this up, who's the one guy at 23 that you just want them to get? Do you have a guy? You know my guy is Justin Jefferson.
That's the thing. I was trying to think of that today. And he played on the same team that we were talking about just a few minutes ago, Chaisson. If they got him there, I mean, man, I don't know if he's going to fall that far, but he's enough teams might get scared away by the lack of total production in college where he might slip. I think that's the thing where people will say, well, he only had this many, you know, sacks, and you know that might cause him to slip. And I think that if the Patriots got him, he can do so many different things for you on that defense. He's just got such a great athletic profile that he'd be a great pick.
Absolutely. I think his versatility really fits the Patriots extremely well, along with the leadership skills, and they'll hone the pass rush. They'll figure out how to get him to get, you know, they don't need him to get sack numbers. That's not what the Patriots are about anyways. So they'll take the pressure rates that he'll put up, and he'll be very successful. Obviously, I'm going Justin Jefferson, just on the other side of the ball for LSU. You know, just pick an LSU Tiger. Pick an LSU Tiger, but Justin Jefferson, get the guy. I think the coolest part about Jefferson is I actually went back and watched a little bit of 2018 tape for him last week. He played on the outside mostly in 2018. Yeah. Ja'Marr Chase shows up. He plays on the inside the next year, and he dominates both inside and outside in following, you know, back-to-back seasons. So he really, it's not just the slot reps. Go watch the outside tape too. He's pretty darn good out there as well. But just in terms of everything that he brings to the table, he would fit here just perfectly as a between-the-numbers threat for the most part. A guy that can horizontally stretch the defense, maybe not vertically stretch the defense like a Denzel Mims or someone like that, but he's going to horizontally create chunk plays, and we know the Patriots love to do that as an offense. Adam and I are going to be back maybe Sunday, maybe Monday. We'll figure out a time to recap the entire draft and get all the picks in to one or two shows and figure out a way to have analysis on every single pick that they make. Adam, is there anything else that you got coming down this weekend or anything?
No, it's all drafts. I mean, it's so funny. When the draft is over, it's going to be so sad because...
What do we do now?
There's no actual games to watch and stuff like that. But no, it'll be fun. We'll have a lot of fun with the draft.
Absolutely. And luckily, the Patriots have 12 selections currently. I don't think they'll make all 12, but they're going to make 8, 9, 10 selections, something like that. And that will give us plenty to sink our teeth into over the next week of film and on here on the podcast. For me on clnsmedia.com, if you listen to this before the first round, make sure to go check out my mock draft, my final mock draft for the Patriots on clnsmedia.com. On Patriots Press Pass, our YouTube channel, you have all sorts of draft preview content, stuff, best Patriot fits, talking position by position with Taylor Kyles and Bobby Kravitsky. We have tons of stuff up there for the draft, so make sure to go check all of that out. We will also have live draft coverage on Thursday night for the first round. We'll be on some sort of, I think it's a YouTube live or something like that, where we'll be zooming into in and out throughout the first round. Obviously, we will be on air for the Patriots pick as well. I'll have written work, I'll have videos afterwards, and we're really going to blow out the entire 3 days just like we did last year. And then Adam and I will be back sometime on Sunday or Monday on the pod to recap the draft as well. But until next time, signing off for Adam Kirchen, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.